Every blossom blooms in its own season. Some flowers push through when the snow still covers the soil. Others flourish in the heat of the midday sun. Still others emerge with the blaze of an autumnal abundance. Every blossom blooms in its own season. And for the followers of Jesus, this means that Easter does not always come for us in 3 days. Stones are rolled away in resurrection glory, but we are not always ready to see it. Sometimes the seed husk stays sealed. Sometimes the death mask stays stuck. Sometimes we hold up, anxious and afraid, in the tombs of our own making. Now, on that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus. While they were talking, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other?" They stood still, looking sad. One of them answered him, "Are you the only one in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days?" He asked them, "What things?" This is a story about making sense of something that makes no sense. This is a story about coming to grips with resurrection, what it means and what it does not mean. The two disciples on the road to Emmaus have staked everything on Jesus being the promised Messiah, the one to vanquish Rome, redeem Israel, and set the nation back in its rightful place in the order of things. They have followed him, listened to him, believed in him, but with Jesus' death on the cross, they are heartbroken. For them, it feels like their hopes for a better tomorrow have been dashed on the rocks of Golgotha. And despite being by Jesus' side for months or perhaps even years, they do not recognize him as he walks beside them on the road to Emmaus. We do not know the precise reason for this, but I doubt it has anything to do with their eyes and everything to do with their hearts. Perhaps their sadness and anxiety and unbelief have turned them inwards, away from Jesus, away from the world, into an oblivious self-absorption. Recall that in Luke's narrative, the women have already been to the tomb and have returned to tell what they heard and saw there. But to the disciples, their words seemed an idle tale, and they did not believe them. So, skeptical and saddened, these two men check out. They are leaving Jerusalem. Mistrustful of mystery, they are taking their ball and going home. They're getting on Facebook to air their grievances. They have stopped engaging with the world, unable to recognize the risen Christ that is right in front of them. This is a story about resurrection, but at this point, the disciples are still in the tomb. One does not need to look too far to see how a tomb-like self-absorption manifests itself in harmful ways in our lives and in our world. On this day, when we are called to recommit to live with respect in creation, it can be overwhelming to consider truly how badly we are failing as a species in our responsibilities. Our actions and inactions are having dire consequences for us and for all children of creation. Thousands of species going extinct every year. Climate change and clear cuts and highways through the green belt. Undrinkable water in dozens of indigenous communities. A floating continent of plastic in the ocean. Crowded and unhealthy cities with not nearly enough public green space to breathe and just to be. Fertilizers, insecticides, and herbicides stripping the soil of its biodiversity and causing colony collapse of bees and the other pollinators that we are reliant on to grow our food. And with eyes watering from forest fire smoke, we seek out a Messiah for our time. One to put our faith in, the one who is supposed to save us. And with the robot voice of secularism, governments and cultures collectively cry out, technology! Technology will save us. Technology that almost is always linked to corporate interests and almost never considers the mysterious network of relations between things and is therefore oblivious to the reality that fiddling with one problem over here often creates so many more problems over there. We are polluting the earth, certainly, but in these days we are also polluting our minds with more and more stuff, more data and more news, more entertainment, more doom scrolling through celebrity culture until our weary eyes are cataract to the beauty and brokenness of the world around us. Through our addiction to shiny and plastic things and our propensity to close off when things get hard and our self-imposed disconnect from God's good and growing creation, we are polluting our very souls. And so I ask you how we can possibly recognize the Messiah on the road when we are still in the tomb, stuck under a pile of our own junk. As they came near the village, Jesus walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, because it is almost evening and the day is now nearly over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread and he blessed it. And he broke it and he gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and then he vanished from their sight. Into a moment of self-absorbed cynicism, sadness, and disbelief, the risen Christ is made known to his disciples in the breaking of bread. And such a simple act that is not so simple after all, a simple act that makes sense of that which makes no sense. The risen Christ is made known in the breaking of bread. This act of hospitality and generosity was central to his ministry, the taking and the blessing and the breaking and the giving. This was the same intimation of benevolence he made in the feeding of the 5,000. And then again in the celebration of the Passover, Jesus' last meal with his disciples and friends before his betrayal. Indeed, the connection to the Passover meal is intentional and deeply meaningful here. Leading into his Jewishness, Jesus demonstrates through tangible acts of love that just as the Passover feast is a remembrance of God's liberating action in the Exodus from Egypt, whenever his disciples break bread together, they are to remember God's liberating action on the cross, not just from bondage and slavery, but from death itself. They are to remember that because of God's redemptive love for all of creation, the tomb has no power. And through the simple act of eating together, they and we are invited to embark on a new journey with God, stepping forward into a new life of intimate relationship with the risen Christ. As it says in our United Church Song of Faith, the simple things of life on this planet, water, bread, wine, point beyond themselves to God and God's love, teaching us to be alert to the sacred in the midst of life. Teaching us to see with the eyes of Easter, where resurrection is real and God provides all that we need. Through the gifts of creation, God provides everything we need to nourish our bodies and our minds and our souls. As the psalmist writes, "I will feed you with the finest of wheat, and with honey from the rock I will satisfy you." The food we eat matters because all matter matters to God. We are not separate from the mysterious and interconnected systems that feed us. Our bodies are part of the unbroken flow of energy from the fish in the stream to the hawk in the sky, from the seed in the soil to the hands of the harvest to the bakers that bake our daily bread, from the blossom to the bee to the colony. It all matters to God. It all points to the sacred in the midst of life. And when we see it, and when we feel it, and when we understand the fundamental truth that our redemption is wrapped up in the redemption of all creation, it guides how we live our lives, what we prioritize, what we protect. With the eyes of Easter, we can see that we personally are not unaffected when garbage is dumped into the ocean, or a grizzly bear is killed for sport, or the last cedar falls in Lebanon. We personally have a stake in the state of nature, and despite what the technological fundamentalists claim, we have a great deal to learn from the other children of creation, the birds of the air, the lilies of the field, the bees of the hive. And I think this is likely something that our board chair here at the church would agree with. In addition to being a high-level banking executive and a major in the Canadian Army and a loving husband to Vin and just a thoroughly excellent human being, our own Joseph Curry is also a beekeeper. He's a beekeeper and he makes his own honey. And if you come downstairs after the service for our lunch and learn, you can try some honey from his backyard hives in Cabbage Town. Now, a metaphor that has been used for centuries to describe the church is that of a beehive. I expect, given his experience in both church and with hives, Joseph can attest that when we are at our best here, this metaphor works. The success of both a bee colony and the church depends on open communication, collaborative decision-making, listening deeply to others, being present in the moment, being flexible to contribute as needed, and perhaps most importantly, in this hyper-individualistic culture of ours, putting the common good above the desires of the individual. And while the hive has the queen, our life here is centered on and in Christ, the one made known in tangible acts of self-giving love. On Earth Day, it can be overwhelming to consider truly how badly we are failing in our responsibilities to live with respect in creation. It can be easy to fall into the cynical, tomb-like mindset that says, I am too small, I am too insignificant to make a difference, so what's the point in even trying? To allow ourselves to be susceptible to the false narratives by the fake messiahs. This happens to all of us, I expect, from time to time. It happened to me this past week when I was trying to write this sermon. I was being pulled in 100 different directions, and as protection, I could feel my heart hardening. I could feel myself turning inwards, cynically losing connection to what this day is supposed to be about, what church is supposed to be about. And so I stopped, and I did what I often do when I feel like this. I went to the woods. And I walked on the earth. I listened to the birds. And I rubbed the fragrant soil between my hands. And in this season of spring, I could see the signs of rebirth and renewal all around me. And was reminded that if this is true for the other children of creation, the trees and the birds and the insects, it is true for me as well. As I walked, I could feel the veil of separation falling. I could feel the power of the tomb release its grip. I could see, and I could feel, and I could understand what resurrection is really all about. Through the generous gifts of creation, God provides everything we need to nourish our bodies and our minds and our souls. We are part of a mysterious network of relations between things, and because of that, we matter. And what we do matters. Every time we come together as the church, it matters. Whether you are online or in person, you are vital. Vital to what Christ seeks to do in the world. We are meant to feed as we have been fed. And like the beehive in Joseph's backyard, we are meant to model a way of being with each other that leads to the flourishing of all. Every blossom blooms in its own season. But in our own way, we are each made to, and each have the right to reveal our beauty within the great garden of God's good and growing creation. For each of us and each child of creation is the sacred in the midst of life. You are the sacred in the midst of life. I end now with the words of Cahil Gibran from his book, The Prophet. And now you ask in your heart, how shall we distinguish that which is good from that which is not good? Go into your fields and into your gardens, and you shall learn that it is the pleasure of the bee to gather the honey of the flower, but it is also the pleasure of the flower to yield its honey to the bee. For to the bee, a flower is a fountain of life, and to the flower, a bee is a messenger of love. And to both bee and flower, the giving and the receiving is a need and an ecstasy. So you too, be like the flowers and the bees. Amen.